Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And a welcome to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity, I'm Greg Corumbus, bringing you good news, bad news, and just some bizarre news as it all relates to conservatives. And let's start, Jim, with the 2012 races in a different way. This is not good news for Claire McCaskill, but it could be good news for whoever the Republican challenger is to her. McCaskill basically admitting that the taxpayers improperly paid for the use of her plane on certain flights. She has now reimbursed it. And she also had to admit this in terms of storing the plane back in Missouri.
There should have been a reporting to the county of the existence of this airplane since it has been hangared in St. Louis County. Because it was never declared to the county, there was never a bill sent and there was never a bill paid. There are people I could blame for this, but I know better.
Well, that's because she is to blame for this, and she's also tried to build for herself a reputation as someone who's a stickler on ethics and financial reform and that sort of thing. So this is going to hurt her when she's already trying to scramble after four really liberal years trying to make voters in Missouri, which is increasingly red, forget what she did for most of her time in her first term in the U.S. Senate, Jim. So good for the U.S. Senate nominee for the Republicans, if in fact we can actually figure out who that's going to be.
Yeah, there are a couple of folks, and it's kind of early in the cycle. A couple of folks have said that they're not interested, like Jim Talent. But with each passing, you know, indicator that McCaskill may be in trouble, maybe some of these folks reconsider those decisions. And again, this you know, by itself, this would not doom a Democrat. Missouri is not a terribly liberal state, but obviously Democrats can win there if they bring out the vote in Kansas City and in St. Louis, particularly St. Louis. And as you know, the traditional approach for a Democrat in this state is to play populism, to set up yourself as the defender of the people against the powerful. And McCaskill has done this in past campaigns against Democrat rivals in primaries and against Republicans. And you know, one of the previous examples she cited was private jet use by her opponents, and now here she is. Greg, I think what's actually more, almost as damaging as the fact that she's accrued close to, was it $280,000 or so,
right,
in back taxes, is the fact that she's able to write a check and pay for it. I mean, and this is a woman who spent her life in quote-unquote public service. I mentioned this in the Morning Jolt, and somebody had corrected me. Greg, I don't know about you. I could write a check for $280,000. Just that check wouldn't clear.
Right.
You know, obviously, her husband has some wealth. But when you find yourself in a lot of trouble and you say, don't worry, I'm writing a check for $280,000, most taxpayers just aren't going to relate to that. And that just kind of seems like there's room for a campaign against McCaskill that really focuses on this theme of our elected leaders all of a sudden living this life of the aristocracy. I mean, why does she have a private jet? Because apparently first class or business class isn't good enough for her. By the way, I would note that years ago, Greg, I saw Strom Thurmond flying coach, and I always always had a certain amount of respect for the man. He was willing to get his knees jammed in there and sit next to the fat guy. I was not the fat guy in question, but some would say that description is apt for me. But the bottom line being that, you know, why do politicians not worry about TSA, you know, grabbing their junk? Because they don't deal with this stuff. They don't do their own taxes. They don't deal with these sorts of things. And I think that's kind of what's fueling a great deal of the fury of the Tea Parties, is that our lives are regulated and managed by people who effectively exempt themselves from all of these pain in the tuchus regulations and fees and costs and taxes.
I think that's right. And, you know, like you said, being able to cut a check that big, hard to declare yourself a champion of the middle class and someone who understands what people are going through if they're living paycheck to paycheck, when you can just kind of whip out that kind of money on a moment's notice. But we'll see what impact this has. She's getting it out early. It's going to be a long time before that campaign really kicks in earnest. Certainly for her, it'll probably be sometime in the middle of next year. So we'll see what all's going on and how big of a factor it is. But it's one more arrow in the quiver for whoever the Republican nominee is. To number two now, Jim, and as it has been for a number of days in a row here, it's the situation in Libya. Obviously, the situation goes on. The cruise missiles continue. But President Obama, during his press conference in Chile on Monday, it was painfully obvious that not only did he not want to talk about this, but that he was awkward addressing it in any way, shape, or form. You could tell that because the one questioner was actually allowed to ask about Libya, Obama's first 2 points in response were, weren't you born in Chile? And did you see Chilean reporters that he tried to ask 3 questions at the same time, which was basically his way of giving himself more time to come up with an answer to the actual questions that were asked. Not a bad tactic there. But it's clear that he was in an absolute urgent rush to make sure that he's going to hand over control of this operation to one of our allied partners. He can't wait for that to happen. He can't give a straight answer on whether getting rid of Gaddafi is an essential part of this plan, basically suggesting that apparently it's okay and some strategy here to let him stay in power somehow. You got members of both sides of Capitol Hill not sure what the plan is or when it's going to end or how it's going to end or what the end game is. And then this is a guy who clearly doesn't want to talk about it and can't wait to get it over with, even though he's probably not sure how it's going to end.
Yeah, you know, I've been kind of the glass half full guy on the Libyan operation so far, Greg, but the president and the administration are making it tougher with each passing day. I'm glad to see mercenaries from all over Africa not collecting their paychecks. I'm pleased to see the pro-Gaddafi forces on the run. But it looks like the rebels are still having a tough time, and it's just hard to imagine this resolving itself in a matter of days. Now, Gates, when he was in Russia, indicated that the U.S. would be turning this over in a matter of days and that this military tempo of the operations would be slowing down after a couple of days. We will know in a couple of days whether that assessment is correct or whether it isn't. And more people are kind of, you know, feeling like I think the words that keep coming up are, what then? If the rebels can't retake, can't fight their way back to Tripoli, what then? If Gaddafi starts, you know, attempting to escalate and talking about his, you know, he talked about trying to blow up ships and planes over the Mediterranean, what then? You know, I kind of wonder if a possibility right now we feel like this is an optional war and that this doesn't have any particular U.S. National interest at stake. Gaddafi could change that very quickly if he decided to try to strike at Americans. We understand, you know, one jet already had mechanical problems and the pilots ejected. Sounds like they came home safe. And so that's the good news. But there just seems like just greater and greater uncertainty going by as this military operation progresses, which makes it harder and harder to, you know, feel good about what's going on over there. Hopefully things will resolve themselves with minimal risk to life and limb and not, you know, not too many innocent lives lost. But it certainly doesn't feel like a great deal of confidence coming from the top as this action progresses.
No, not at all. Then you've got John McCain, who was one of the first ones to call for the no-fly zone, saying last night that, well, that actually got put into place faster than we expected. But now, unfortunately, we need a no-drive zone, which makes me think pretty soon we're going to have a no-walk zone somewhere. And eventually that's going to require more and more personnel actually on the ground, which is not what we were bargaining for in the beginning. And it'll be interesting to see how exactly that all plays out, because I don't think a lot of Americans bargained for that either. On to number 3 now, and if there's any way to tie the presidential campaign to the situation in Libya, we have found it. Donald Trump appearing on Fox and Friends, talking to the crew there on the couch and over the phone, saying that he is more experienced than anyone currently considering running for president because in his vast business dealings, he's dealt with more heads of state and more key business leaders. And so he just knows how this works. And then, oh, by the way, he's also dealt with Gaddafi before, and here's that story.
I rented him a piece of land. He paid me more for one night than the land was worth for the whole year or for 2 years. And then I didn't let him use the land. That's what we should be doing.
Was that over in New Jersey?
I don't want to use the word screw, but I screwed him.
Well, there you go. That's apparently the U.S. foreign policy if Trump gets elected president. We're just going to screw the people we don't like.
You know, look, I got to say, screw Gaddafi is not the worst slogan I've heard of a 2012 slogan for any presidential candidate. And I suppose, you know, at some point Trump will be able to argue that he's been more effectively hitting Gaddafi than perhaps any Democrat has. Again, I remain a skeptic on the Trump candidacy. I can't wait for this to be revealed as a giant publicity stunt for his new board game or something. And the mind reels at the possibility of Gaddafi and Trump in a real estate deal. You first hear that, you're thinking that, here comes the fantastic Trump at Zawiya casino just outside of Tripoli. You know, there's a lovely boardwalk there looking out on the Mediterranean. It's going to be all class, you could say. So, you know, I suppose we should, you know, we shouldn't be surprised that Donald Trump can find a way to insert himself into any development. If we declare war on Madagascar, I'm sure whoever the ruler of Madagascar is, I'm sure Trump has had business dealings with him at some point. I guess, you know, Donald, good for you, I guess. This is one of those situations where, as much as I don't like Donald, I'll root for him against Gaddafi. But really, I don't think that saying you screwed him in a real estate deal is really the doesn't have me saying, yes, that's precisely what I want to see in a commander-in-chief in the future.
It's going to be an interesting presidential race, though, if he does get in. But I'm with you. I think this is a giant publicity stunt that he's probably going to pull the wool away from our eyes probably in a couple months here. Jim, a fascinating day as always. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us tomorrow at the same time for Wednesday's 3 Martini Lunch.